Welcome to another episode of The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors, a clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. Boom! We're in, and Mike Coulter has just said, gosh, that's just like Thunderbirds, because it counts down from 5, 4, and here we are, live in The Good Listening To Show. I'm Chris Grimes, What's Your Story? Very enigmatically and profoundly and wonderfully, I have Mike Coulter in the show. I'm excited to talk to you because you are Manifesto Man, because that's one of your great expertise. And if I may also call you Wingman as well, because you are a co-collaborator with the wonderful and enigmatic, similarly, David Hyatt. So you are the creative director of the Do Lectures. You're also a presenter with your own flagship show within Do Radio, but also you have Tiny Habits Business Class, which is something we're going to talk about as well, yep, at your wonderful website, which is called habitualize.com. Yep. This is just where I'm blowing some happy smoke at you, Mike. So Mike Cooper, you're looking great, great shirt, popping off for the visuals, but also you're sat, for those watching, in front of one of the most iconic calendars known to man, which is the Sendell calendar, which you inform me sells out very regularly because you've almost got to get in the queue to get one.
Yeah.
It reminds me of a cricket scoreboard.
Yes.
And it's also got the font, which I think is extra beautiful, that is the same font as the New York subway.
That's about right, yeah. My wife asked me what I want for Christmas, and I saw these calendars that they were designed in 1966 by an Italian designer in New York, and the Italian designer also designed the New York subway signage, which may or may not be the same font. I'm not sure about that. And it's the only calendar in the world in the Museum of Modern Art. Oh, that'll be interesting to have. And then I'd have to mess about over 12 months in the set that I shoot, video conversation like this in all my Zoom calls. I could just leave it as it is. So I think Sendell, something like that. And they do indeed sell out. And I love it. It's just I love its simplicity. I like that whole era, the era of Charles and Ray Eames were the great designers in America at the time. And it was also an era that, as a very, very young man, you know, it's the Mad Men era of advertising. And that's one of the things that shaped me. And we will be talking about that in the show, Chris, about how advertising shaped me. And it was 1960s advertising, the great Volkswagen ads, Doyle Dane Birnbach, you know, the whole Madison Avenue thing. So, well, I'll be touching on that today. So I'll be unpacking that a little bit later.
And I'm intrigued to get you on the open road of your copywriting chops and where else you've trained, because I'm also intrigued to talk to you all about the enigmatic professor who is BJ Fogg.
The great BJ Fogg, yes, very influential in my life was BJ, yes. So, I'm happy to pick up on that.
And that also reminded me of Phileas Fogg, of course, which is Around the World in 80 Days, which is different. But anyway, I'm just making connections.
And actually, you know, funny enough, in the 1980s, 90s, Phileas Fogg's advertising account was with one of the great British agencies called Bartle Bogle Hegarty, and they did some fantastic work then. So it's totally relevant.
Wonderful. And the Do Lectures first came to my attention when I saw it just sung to me. You'll notice where I go with my own colour schemes. There was a picture that David Hyatt uploaded of a yellow door standing on its own.
Yes.
In a field in Cardigan. And I went, wowzers. And it sung to me. And then this idea of you cross through the gateway of the door, old me to new you. And I just thought that's your vibe attracts your tribe is what I'm trying to say.
So yes, David is phenomenally good at that sort of thing. And you know, David and I both joke that we're both working class lads who never went to university. But actually, we did go to the best university. No, we worked in advertising agencies, which was the best university, a young creative could go to, you know, in our era. I think it's changed these days. So yeah, so Dave's got a very good, I mean, Dave's a brilliant copywriter, but he's also got a very good eye for an image. You know, the old picture tells a thousand words cliche. And I think that's one of the reasons why they do lectures, particularly the 3-day event in July, which for people who don't know what the Do Lecture is, the main stage is a 3-day live event in July where 20 great speakers come from all around the world to talk in a cowshed to 100 people who want to listen to them. And the ad lib that I always trot out, that I pretend that I've thought about on the fly, is, you know, if you haven't heard of the Do Lectures, I'd say it's a bit like TED Talks. Then I pause for effect and say, but it's on a farm. Then I pause it in the far, far west of Wales. It's impossible to get to. And then the final pause, it says, and it's for cool people, unlike TED Talks, which is my implicit aside, I suppose, about it. But yeah, so the Do Lectures has been a huge part of my life for the last 10 years. And just one final thing about the creative director. I'm not actually a creative director for Do Lectures. I'm much more sort of menial than that. I'm sort of a creative director on special projects and things like that we do, like manifesto courses and workshops. We wrote a report a few years ago that went down where it was all about side projects. We take deep dives into subjects.
Yes, side hustles or side quests.
Exactly that, yes. And so, yeah, and it's been a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun, yeah.
And one of your current most exciting side quests is Do Radio, and I know that you co-host with David Three Winds.
Thank you, yeah, Three Winds. Do Radio is a live radio station, broadcast 24 hours a day, 8 different shows. So you get 3 times to listen to it a day. And there's an app and it's archived, so you can stream it these days if you wish. But yeah, and it's very much like this conversation, actually, Chris. So I feel really comfortable with you today. It's very much you know that old saying about entrepreneurs, you know, an entrepreneur is somebody that jumps off a cliff and builds the plane on the way down. three wins on Do Radio is like Dave and I are figuring ourselves out each week as we do the show, and we don't know what each is going to talk about. We know it's always going to be about either time, money, or mojo. Those are the 3 stables. Every single week we talk about a different aspect of time, money, and mojo. But when we press the go button every time we record it, I have no idea what he's going to talk about.
I just love that. Time, money, or mojo, as you said, with your
That. And the accent there, the northern thing, that's something I've played on my whole life. Because the other thing about advertising, when I went into it, it was dominated by Northern in London when I was working in the 90s. It was dominated by Northern working class kids. And we used to play on that, you know, you'd been blunt and, you know, no nonsense and all that kind of thing. So,
Ecky Thump, I'd just like to say at that
point. All that. Yeah. In fact, when my wife and I got married, she's from Lancashire. You know, I'll call them rival families, let's say, are 2 different families, mine from Yorkshire.
I sound like the Capulets and the Montagues.
It was a bit Shakespearean. Again, I know Shakespeare comes at the end of the show, but to try and keep harmony at the dinner, at the dining table, we gave Yorkshire pudding and Lancashire hot pot to all our guests, which kind of was a diplomatic menu, let's call it.
Yeah. And that's before tea, and we get the scones versus scone debacle.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's right. Well, and now I live in Cornwall, you've got the Devon and Cornwall thing. Is it cream or jam first on your scones?
Yes. Wonderful. So let's get on the open road of the structure of the show. Can't wait to get you on the open road of this. If you've not seen the show before, for those watching and listening, where have you been? I'm about 270 into these monkeys. This is the show in which I invite movers, makers, shakers, mavericks, influencers, and also personal heroes into a clearing or serious happy place of my guests' choosing as they all arrive to share with us their stories of distinction and genius. And you'll notice in blowing some happy smoke at you, Mike Coulter, how qualified you are for many, many, many of those skittles that I knocked down to bring you into the show.
Thank you.
So, yes, it's going to involve a clearing, a tree, a lovely, juicy storytelling exercise called 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. There's going to be some alchemy, some gold, a couple of random squirrels, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, a golden baton, and a cake. So it's absolutely all to play for. So any questions before I get you on the open road of this, Mike Coulter?
Let's get rolling, Chris. Looking forward to it. Thank you.
Welcome aboard, sir. So, first of all, your clearing. Where is your serious happy place? Where does Mike Coulter go to get clutter-free, inspirational, and able to think?
I was kind of torn on this, actually. There's two places. The first one was going to be the Atlantic Ocean. One of the reasons that we live in Cornwall was, you know, ever since being a very young man, I've always enjoyed being in the water. I've always been surfing and stuff like that. And as I'm getting older, I still surf, but I body surf now, and it's just a pair of fins and a hand plane. And my happy place is that even when it's a crowded day in the lineup, is paddling another 20 meters back out, further back out, rolling over on my back, looking up at the sky. You know, there's a nice gentle swell going, and that's just my happy place. It's meditative. There's a lot of research on the psychology of being in seawater and mood. In fact, some around the, believe it or not, around the coast of the UK, there's some NHS services help people with depression and low mood by taking them out in the water. And you'll have heard a thing about surfers getting stoked and stuff like that. Well, there's a physiological phenomenon whereby being in salt water actually enhances a person's equilibrium, and it's all to do with balance in the ear. So what I knew, sorry. And then I thought, actually, no, but there needs to be a tree near, and, you know, other than a log of a tree bouncing up and down in the Atlantic, which won't have many...
Which, by the way, would work for me.
I took it slightly close to home. I mean, literally slightly close to home, I mean, literally down the road from me. So the beach is about 5 or 6 miles from where I live, but even nearer is one of the wonders of the modern world, I think, which is a cycle trail. It's called the Camel Trail. And that, without doubt, is my happy place. We moved to Cornwall 30 years ago, then we couldn't make it work, and we moved and lived in Edinburgh for 17 years. But we came back about 12 years ago, and I've pretty much ridden my bike on the Camel Trail, certainly every week, but some weeks every day. Literally thousands and thousands of times, and it's absolutely my happy place. It's an old railway line. Used to be able to get the train from Paddington to Padstow, pretty much. You had to change at Wadebridge, but you used to be able to get a train away. So there's a paved old train line with no traffic on it, just for cyclists and walkers, and it goes from Bodmin to the Atlantic Ocean, and like next stop the United States. And it's absolutely my happy place. And in fact, there's lots of wild apple trees along the trail there. It's about 8-10 meters wide. It's serene, as I say. There's an estuary there. There's wonderful wildlife. And over the years, and this is gospel truth, I've done so much of my work there. I probably had done more work on that trail than I have at my desk. You know, on my bike, I have a notepad with me, or in more recent years when I've used technology, like there's a dictation app, there's many dictation apps called Otter, and I'd actually dictate to it while I was out on the bike, like emails I got to send, or posts for LinkedIn I've got to write, or content for workshops and courses. Then when I get back home, it's all there on the screen, transcribed for me, ready to go. So yeah, my happy place, without doubt, is the Camel Trail.
Both of those answers, may I say, were delicious. When were you last floating on your back in the Atlantic?
Oh, well, funny, I'm getting that age where I've spent more time rehabbing from knee surgery than in the water, and hernia operations and all that sort of overuse injuries and bits and pieces that, you know, as you get older. Nothing major, everything routine. So I haven't been in the water for weeks. Well, actually, months, actually. Probably back end of late autumn last year. But I was on my bike yesterday, and I was on my bike the day before, and I was on my bike the day before that. You know, come rain or shine, I'm always trying to find time to be on my bike if I can, unless I'm traveling.
And if I may ask, next time you are floating on your back, think about this moment in this clearing, because I love what you've just positioned for us. It's beautiful storytelling. And I myself was on the Camel Trail just a few months ago after my son had finished his A-levels, and I went up, down, up, down, up, down. The weather was appalling, but it was just beautiful.
Isn't it? It's so tranquil, even if the weather's appalling. I mean, it's just, you know, you go through quarries, there's a little, I don't know if the coffee shop was open halfway down the quarry for you, and at either end, you know, whether you're in the Padstow, you can get some great fish and chips. It's just classic English, locked in a time capsule thing, you know. I mean, it's a million miles from AI. Well, that's one of the things I love about it.
Ooh, what a great answer of itself. A million miles from AI. Just let that float there.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach. Here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And now, as you beautifully already positioned, I'm going to arrive with a tree in your clearing now, which could be the log floating alongside you in the Atlantic. But on the camel trail, I'm now going to arrive with a tree, and then I'm going to shake your tree to see which storytelling apples fall out. Yeah. How do you like these apples?
Yeah.
And this is where you've been kind enough to have thought about 4 things that have shaped you, 3 things that inspire you, 2 things that never fail to grab your attention. And when we get there, I'll talk about squirrels. You know, what are your 2 monsters of distraction? Two things that never fail to distract you. And then the one, Mike Coulter, is a quirky or unusual fact about you. We couldn't possibly know about you until you tell us. It's not a memory test, just to reassure the audience, most particularly. So over to you to interpret the shaking of the canopy of your tree as you see fit.
I have to start, as many people I'm sure have before, would do with my parents. And particularly my dad, Maya. I grew up in a very amazing, loving home. As I say, I grew up in Yorkshire, although my dad was a Scouser. And my mom was from Sunderland. So she was not exactly a Geordie. I think they call Mackham if you're from Sunderland. So mom's from Sunderland. So. And it was at a time when, I guess, it was after the Second World War, before they had me, I was born in the 50s, but there wasn't so much work in Liverpool or in the Northeast, and the textile factories in Halifax were recruiting from all over the place. So mom and dad met, and dad had been in the army, met there. And I'll concentrate on my dad, because the particular story I want to tell my dad that I think absolutely shaped me. So I'm 15, 16 or whatever. I was lucky enough to, I don't even have the 11 plus. You probably had the 11 plus for 20 years, but I passed my 11 plus and went to a grammar school, which is unusual for people in my family. I wasn't very academic at all, but I did okay at school, but more in sports and stuff like that than the more academic stuff. But, you know, when you're at school and you start talking to the careers advisor about what you're going to do when you leave, and I kind of knew I wasn't going to go to university, just didn't speak to them. We didn't have the money anyway, but I had the conversation with my dad about being what I was going to do for a job. And bear in my mind, I was very poor at all the classic standard academic pastimes or teachings. But my dad was really insistent that I go and work in a bank. I was awful at maths. I just hated it, and I was terrible at it. And my dad knew that. But it didn't bother him. He said, no, I think you should go and work in a bank. And this is sort of an inkling that my dad was, as I said, Scouser, funny man. He loved sport. He's a very kind man. I knew he loved me, though he never said it, but he didn't do that sort of thing. Again, I said, Dad, you know, and I know I'm rubbish at maths. Why? He said, yeah, no, he says, don't worry about it. I said, why? He said, listen, banks at that time, All over the UK, I think, certainly in England, I think, banks used to close on Wednesday afternoons. You only worked a half day on Wednesday. But banks in Halifax and other cities in the towns that are around, certainly around Yorkshire, but in Halifax, maybe they were 14, 50, I mean, banks, so double figures banks. They all had a football team. And there's a football league for the banks played each other every Wednesday afternoon at football. My dad couldn't believe there was a job where you were paid to play football every Wednesday afternoon. So I sort of picked the bones out of it, unpacked it, what he meant was, and what he really meant was get a job where you can bunk off and play football on a Wednesday afternoon and get paid for it. So I didn't get a job in a bank. And my first job, like most people, my first one or two jobs weren't where I landed, where my path took me.
Yes.
But I knew I wanted something that would shape me as a working class kid in a way that... Another thing my dad said was, and you'll have heard this before, always get a job, and this also supports his theory why I should join a bank because I could play football. Always get a job where at the end of the week, you think you should have paid them for the week. So that is without doubt the most fundamental life-shaping thing that happened to me, the earliest thing I can remember, because it's what led me ultimately to have a fairly long and reasonably successful but very satisfying career in advertising. Advertising, particularly if you work in a creative department, you are literally paid to daydream, paid to play. You can I say arse about on the show? You can arse about and get paid for it. In fact, when I worked for a really well-respected, getting back to my ideas on the Camel Trail on the bike, most of my ideas come somewhere other than that. I still work hard at desk. I know about deep work and cranking stuff out. But a lot of my stuff, a lot of my creative ideas, don't come sat at a desk. They come out and about, and hence the Camel Trail thing. But years later, I was working in an advertising agency in Edinburgh, and no one could ever find me at my desk there because I'd just go wandering around Edinburgh with the brief and try to come back with the idea. And it got to the stage where in reception, what the creative director, as a bit of a joke, mounted an A1 or AO map of Edinburgh City and put it in reception with map pins, with sightings of Mike. Has Mike been sighted anywhere? And you could see where Mike had been sighted all that week. That was the first thing that really shaped me was my dad and his encouragement to get a job that you loved, where you think that you should be paying them and you could, you know, not be watching the clock or the check-in and check-out and things like that. And as a consequence of that, I've never really worked 9 to 5. I've always had this kind of career where I know this sounds a bit dangerous in terms of burnout, in terms of the pressure and the stress that we can all be under in our jobs. But I've never made a massive distinction between how I earn my living and other areas of my life. That said, I do have a motto, and as you'd expect from me, it's to do with advertising and slogans. I don't know if you remember, Chris, years ago, the confectionery bar, which is still going, Mars Bars, had a slogan, and the slogan was, and I think it's the first advertising slogan I can remember, actually. The slogan was, a Mars a day helps you work, rest, and play. And I think that's the most wonderful motto or Venn diagram for life, that balance of work, rest, play. Advertising, I used to do all of those at the same time. I'd be working on something, but I'd be really chilled about it. And I'd actually been, it was a playful way to earn a living.
Great stuff. Yes.
So that led me to the second shake of the tree thing that shaped me, which is advertising, which I can unpack if you wish. I can go straight into it if you want to.
Yeah, sure.
So where I landed, so not getting a job at the bank as a teenager, where did I go when I left school? Well, I got a job. Again, quite fundamental to me, working for a local newspaper. And I went in 17, wet behind the ears, total trainee. But the joy of it was that I was there about 3 years, I think. The joy of it was I'd work in every single department there. I'd work everything from one of the jobs I loved, and I did this for free. I didn't actually get paid. I was paid to work for the newspaper. But on a Saturday night, at like 20 to 5, the sports department was absolutely packed because they had what was called the Green Final, as well as a daily newspaper, evening newspaper, the Halifax Evening Courier coming out. Every Saturday night, they published what was called the Green Final, which was a sports paper, all the horse racing results from over Britain, all the football results, local Halifax Town Report. And it was amazing because at 20 to 5, when the final whistle went to the football, it all kicked off and everyone had to file their copy and sign up. And then it had to be set in hot metal. Then it had to be printed.
Yeah.
And my job, or I worked with the guy who did the job, of when the bundles of green flannels came off, they were thrown in the back of a van, the courier delivery van. And we used to go around all the news agents that stayed open late around Halifax and all the pubs. Pubs used to take bundles of newspapers because a lot of people used to like a pint and read the sports paper, at, you know, whenever the papers got there, 6:30 in the evening.
I can smell the print. I can feel
exactly.
The print.
It was the print. Magical.
Hot plates as well. Hot plates of printing. Love.
Yeah, but the day job was I'd spend a few weeks working in the photography retouching department where all the photographs were retouched, or I'd spend some time working in the newsroom, or I'd spend some time working in telesales with the telesales girls and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so I learned everything about newspapers. And the two things that stick with me, one is the newspaper do what were called advertising features, and it'd be really, you know, really kind of low stakes stuff, like a new pub would be refurbished. And so the people at the paper say, we can make a lot of money in advertising revenue here. How? Okay, well, we'll write an article about the pub, and then we'll put ads all around the article in a full page, and we'll sell an ad to the people who did the plumbing at the pub. We'll sell an ad to the people who did the carpets and the curtains at the pub. We'll sell an ad to the people who did the security at the pub, you know. And then it was, right, who's going to write the copy for it? Mike, you're going to write the copy for this pub. So go to the pub, speak to the landlord, find the history, why did he do it? Have a drink while you're there, which was great. Well, then get the list of all the suppliers. Then hit the phones and learn how to sell. Learn how to sell someone. And the only line was that, you know, I'm Mike Coulter from the Halifax Union Courier. We do an advertising feature on the Golden Lion that you did the plumbing at, or you did the carpets for. And the brewery are really pleased with your work, and I would say something like, and the brewery, I'm sure you'd like to support them by taking an ad. The implication being, if you don't take an ad, you won't get the carpet or the curtains or the plumbing job, the next pub that's refurbished. You know, so right. You know, this kind of advertising pressure sales and all that. Anyhow, so I did all that.
And I'm loving the human Mars bar through line. This is work and play. And
work is to play. Yeah.
We were brilliant to have around, you can tell, because you were engaged, you were interested, you were just good to have around, and you wanted to get stuck in with
you. I wanted to do it. Yeah, that's the thing I learned from, one most important things I learned from BJ Fogg, but for any of us to do anything, if there is already intrinsic motivation within you to do the thing, it's much more likely to happen. So if somebody said to me, Mike, well, there's some amazing research has come out. If you eat chocolate every day, you'll lose 1/2 stone and you'll be as strong as an ox. Whatever it is, you know. I wouldn't need any motivation to eat that chocolate. But if someone said, Mike, some new research has said, if you eat 1 pound of raw broccoli every day, you'd be as strong as an ox and you'll lose, right? That's never going to happen with me. It's never going to happen because I'm not motivated to do the thing. And you look at most successful Silicon Valley products and services and apps on the phone, they target people who already want to do the thing.
Yes.
Kids already want to keep in touch with other kids on the phone.
Yeah.
Business people already want to scope out what other competitors or what potential employees or what their own company is saying on LinkedIn or whatever. They already want to do the thing.
Yes.
And I'll maybe talk a little bit more about that later, but just let me get back to the courier. So I'll just wrap on the shaking the tree at the courier and what shaped me. So I'd been at the courier 2 or 3 years, and then I used to see people my age, guys and girls, every Thursday, I had to see four or five of them, come into reception at the newspaper, and they all had big, big brown paper parcels under their arms. And they were really cool, these kids. And I thought, oh, I like the look of them. She looks nice. He looks really smart. He looks clever, stuff like that. And then I'd see them in town in the trendy bars or clubs and stuff like that on a Saturday night, and they all had plenty of cash, and all the guys seemed to be driving Capris and all that, and they're all dressed like they should be in, you know, fashion magazine. And I say to the receptionist, say, these people who come, these kids like me with these big cramp, who are they? Shall they work for a thing called advertising agencies. There's actually a thing called advertising agencies where products like department stores and car companies pay advertising agencies to have these creative ideas, like you have when you're selling your little crappy pub refurbishment ads. But they do these big campaigns, and they're just bringing the artwork in for the full page ads for the car dealership or the department store or whatever, and things like that. I thought, oh God, what? I thought newspapers did all that. No, there are specialist people that do advertising. And that was it. I was off to the races. And then I just wanted a job in advertising. I want to leave the newspaper and get a job in advertising. It took me, I actually couldn't get a job. I couldn't get a job in advertising from the get-go. But what I did do was for 2 years, it wasn't about 18 months. But for two winters, I used to take my winter week off the newspaper holiday and go work for free in advertising agencies in the big town Leeds and all that, because yeah. I just wanted it so much.
Yes.
So that was the second thing that really shaped me, was being lucky enough to get a job in the newspaper, understanding that there's this thing called advertising, and saying that's got to be the path for my life.
Boom. I love how you're shaping this and you're following the structure to the letter beautifully, as if you've put it in print and it's there in the Racing Post.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Now, the third shapeage, please.
The third and the fourth are the same source. So, this is a massive fast forward in terms of the newspaper. So, Dad inadvertently pushed me towards a job that ultimately was working in a newspaper. And the newspaper sort of advertently pushed me into working in advertising. And then that was like, 2 or 3 decades. Relatively successful advertising, worked in Germany, worked in Amsterdam, worked in New Zealand. Most of the work was in London, in advertising agencies in London, agency in London, and in Scotland, at one of the great agencies that should have been in London called the Leith Agency. Anyhow, so this is a massive fast forward to 2015-16. Massive fast forward. This is, 25 years, 30 years. And I worked for the Do Lectures then. So I worked for the Do Lectures in 2015-16. And I write a thing called the Side Project Report, which is about the power of side project we touched on. And one of the things I write about in the Side Project, I do a chapter on what's called behavior design. I'd been aware for a year, well, I'd probably been aware for about 2 or 3 years, about a professor at Stanford University called BJ Fogg, who'd been one of the most influential voices in Silicon Valley in the early days of PayPal and LinkedIn and Facebook and Apple. When social media kicked in 2007, BJ Fogg was active at Stanford University. And he'd been very influential in the early days, not so much in more recent years, because he feels quite rightly that Silicon Valley and a lot of the apps have become very dangerous in terms of mental health, in terms of the way that they hijack so much of all our time, not just kids, but, kids, maybe they're a bit more malleable in terms of the
parallel in Frankenstein. We have created a monster, and you're reporting on BJ.
Exactly that. Exactly. It's exactly that. Yeah. So, yeah. And the unpleasant addictive qualities, let's say, that we've all experienced by going down those rabbit holes and still do. And so BJ, his work these days is not to work with Silicon Valley, but actually to be the antidote to Silicon Valley. So point 3 and 4 that shaped me came from BJ Fogg. And the first one was, he himself tried to do a startup in about 2010, and it, I won't say it nearly broke him, but it caused him a lot of stress and a lot of problems and things like that, and not a lot, but some behavioral issues he wasn't too crazy about. And he thought, this is madness. He's saying, you know, I'm one of the world experts in how human behavior works, the psychology of influencing human behavior, which, as I say, been doing in Silicon Valley. Yet I'm allowing these maladaptive and unhelpful habits to not just creep into my life, but affect me in terms of, you know, I'm not dealing with stress as well as I should, or I've got some really maladaptive coping mechanisms. Surely, if anybody can figure out a way or a methodology or a set of models and methods to build strong, robust, positive habits in their life, it's me. So he went back to the drawing board, and just for himself, originally, just for himself, he designed this method that became known as the Tiny Habits Method.
Yes.
Built on his decades of research about how it influences human behavior. And lo and behold, if it didn't have a wonderful, positive outcome for him, and he got himself back on track. So buoyed by this, you know, he shared it with friends and family. Then he started sharing it with his students. He had a thing called the Behavior Design Lab at Stanford. He started sharing it with his students. And lo and behold, lots and lots of people around him, not least himself, are living happier, healthier, more fulfilled lives based on this model, which he called the Tiny Habits Method.
Yes.
I'm writing this report for the Do Lectures, and I kind of knew about the Tiny Habits Method, but I'd never take it seriously. So I'm writing about BJ and Tiny Habits, and I think, right, you know what? I've got this brief to write this side project report, and it's come at a time in my life when I actually needed the money, I needed the work. The brief was fantastic. David Hyatt wrote the brief. It's a fantastic brief. I really want to do the brief, and it was, you know, working with the Do Lectures.
And how did you meet David to even get alongside him in that way?
That's a slightly longer story. It's a relatively interesting story. Rather than break the flow here, Chris, I will come back to that. If we're timing, I'll tell you how do I meet David Hyatt, because I think that's instructive in itself. But thank you for flagging that. So I got this brief on, but here's the thing. To actually really do a great job on it, I had to be on my A game. And at that time in my life, I wasn't even on my F game. You know, it was everything I wanted, and it came at the worst possible time. Yes. You know, usual stuff, I was stressed out, I was drinking too much, I wasn't getting on with the missus. All that human stuff that comes at the wrong time when you least need it was there. And the paradox is, I'm writing about this guy, BJ Fogg, it happened to him, you know, a few years before. So I thought, I need to take this tiny habits thing seriously. So I'm writing a side project report, and I rename it in my head. Mike, you're going to do the side project, and that is learn tiny habits, take it really seriously, and apply it to this project. And I did that, and stone me if it worked, in a really short period of time. So I got so blown away by this. A, we knocked the project out of the park, which was fantastic, but B, more importantly, this is the tree shaking bit, this is the what shaped me bit is, I thought, I need to know more about this. I've just discovered the superpower. I need to know more about this. So I looked into it. Are there any workshops in the UK? Can I find any tiny habits coaches in the UK? Nothing. Crickets. All I could find was that BJ and his sister ran this thing called the Tiny Habits Academy, where you could pay a pretty eye-watering amount of money for me at that time to train over about 8 weeks over Zoom to qualify as a coach. Now, I didn't want to be a coach. I wasn't interested in coaching it, but I wanted the information for my own personal application. So I bit the bullet and I paid it. And because it was in California and it was done over Zoom, well, actually, I think it was done over Skype in those days. It was 4 p.m. Class started every Tuesday, but 4 p.m. California time. So I started class at midnight every Tuesday night. So again, it was another indication about my level of motivation to do the thing. That wasn't being externally motivated. I wanted this thing.
Yes.
So that's what I did. So I trained in that, and I qualified as a tiny habits coach. And to this day, it's amazing. And funnily enough, I did then over time, because I thought, well, just don't keep it to yourself. I did and still do occasionally teach it primarily to creatives like me and say, I was stuck. This is what I did. It might help you. Do you want to hear about it?
Yes.
So that was then just finally on the four tree shakes, BJ was instrumental in the fourth one in a really simple way, but very profound way for me, which went back to his roots about even pre-tiny habits, when his models and methods of understanding human behavior, I realized, and this is only in 2019, so I've had 3 decades of being relatively successful in advertising. And advertising is about influencing, you know, consumer behavior. And in 3 decades of doing it, I'd kind of been making it up as I went on. I'd never been formally trained and qualified and take qualifications in psychology. So I asked BJ Fogarty, he trained me. Again, we did it over Zoom primarily, but then I went to California and did a thing called boot camp with him and qualified in what's called behavior design, which is how do you use it in the day job?
Yes.
How do you use it to get customers? How do you use it to write your website? How do you use it to choose your pricing? How do you use it to decide what your content's going to be in your workshops and courses and things like that? And it changed everything for me. I use it every single, so I ever use it every single day in like tiny habit stuff. If I'm working on stuff like, you know, exercise. For example, when I had knee surgery, I'm convinced if I hadn't learned tiny habits, my rehab wouldn't have been as so quick and phenomenally successful. I realized someone that had been useless, absolutely useless at getting myself to do stuff, one of the world's great procrastinators, to do a 180 and almost like, if I decide to do it, I'm going to do that, but I'm going to use this model and method of tiny habits, and I'm pretty confident I'll be able to nail that really quickly.
And the science of motivation, I've just heard this, you're knee deep in motivation. Which
already, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, most people, I mean, and this is, that's a really interesting point actually, Chris, because when I've been working in advertising years before, when I've been working on health campaigns for when I was working in Scotland, I was working for what was called the Health Education Board for Scotland, and their job was to enhance the health of millions of Scots that were drinking or not eating enough vegetables or, you know, not exercising.
It's also the Scottish stereotypical irony of deep fried Mars bars.
Exactly.
In your Mars a day, work, rest and play.
Exactly. But yeah, in my, you know, a lot of the solutions I came up with in those days, which were baked into the brief. I hadn't even written a brief. But the first, one of the earliest things you've seen, how can we motivate people to drink less, to eat 5 fruit and veg a day, to exercise? How could, all about motivating them and things like that. And I realized years later with BJ Fogg that actually there are millions of people already motivated to do the thing you want them to do. And that's who you need to find first, that low-hanging fruit. And if it worked with them, then you can get to the harder and harder populations and audiences.
There's a delicious irony in the name Fog as well, because this is about clearing the fog.
Absolutely,
and
helping Yeah. I mean, I'm sure BJ would be the first to maybe that's been some kind of deep unconscious driver because he's all about clarity. Exactly. It's all about clarity and simplicity and making stuff easier to do. And you don't need to look very far. But, you know, for example, when Google launched, you know, Google now have got, I don't know, 30, 40 different products, you know, Gmail, self-driving cars, YouTube, spreadsheets, loads of different products. When they started, their first product was a single page on the internet, a search engine. That's all they started with. But here's the thing. When they started, there were already 17 search engines doing perfectly well on the internet. You know, Inktomi, Yahoo, Ask Jeeves. There were loads of different search engines. And what Google genius was, they realized, well, hang on a minute. If millions of people already want to search and we've got a better product that makes it easier to do and they get better results, we don't need to go out saying, hey, we've got a great idea. Why don't you search for things on the internet using our search? No. People already want to do it. So just say, hey, to that audience that's already motivated, say, we've got a better way of doing it.
Yeah.
Airbnb didn't invent bed and breakfast staying in a stranger's house. They didn't have to motivate people. Say, we want to motivate you to stay in a stranger's house in a strange city they haven't been before. They just made it easier to do. You know, the app and the interface, it looks so, the rooms look beautifully clean. The hosts look so they weren't like serial killers. You know, same with Uber. Taxis have been around forever. Yeah. Millions of people already wanted to get from A to B, so they didn't need motivating. They needed to see a little diagram of the taxi coming to pick them up so they could get a swift half in the bar before the taxi gets there. Or they didn't have to give any money to the taxi driver because it was all baked into the app. Yeah. And that was just like the bang moment for me.
Yes.
It's not about motivation. Find people who already want to do it and just let them know that you offer an easier, better solution to what they've been using.
and winding you forward, there's a very exciting moment at the end called Show Us Your QR Code, Please. And I know that you've put all your wisdom into habitualize.com.
Habitualize.com. Yeah, that's me. Anybody else? I'll tag
that up. And that's where you now apply your micro habit, your tiny habits, basically.
It's one of the places people can find me. But I suppose I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't say to people, just type Mike Coulter into Google and see what it shows you. It will show you a famous American actor. If you get the spelling wrong, but if you spell it C-O-U-L-T-E-R, you'll invariably find me.
You've been listening to The Good Listening To Show with me, Chris Grimes. If you'd like to be in the show too, or indeed gift an episode to capture the story of someone else with me as your host, then you can find out how, care of the series strands at the goodlisteningtoshow.com website. And one of the series strands is called Leadership Reflections, for business leaders or those of you that work in the leadership domain to be able to share your leadership lessons learned along your way. Maybe you'd like to play it forward as you move from one leadership opportunity to the next. Maybe you're about to stop and you'd like to drop the mic to preserve your leadership legacy, or you may just want to consolidate where you already are as you share your leadership reflections. Tune in next week for more stories from The Clearing, and don't forget to subscribe and review wherever you get your podcasts.